The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. And for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. Before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we're going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. Often on Armchair Traveler, we share stories about how the COVID pandemic has affected how, when, and where we travel. But that's just one facet of today's ever-changing travel landscape. Also present is the ongoing impact of climate change. Writer Suzanne Rust has found that climate change wreaks havoc in the Arctic and beyond. Her story was written for the Los Angeles Times and appeared in the online extra edition of the December 28, 2021 issue of the News and Observer. And the dateline for her story is Kodiak, Alaska. Forces profound and alarming are reshaping the upper reaches of the North Pacific and Arctic Oceans, breaking the food chain that supports billions of creatures and one of the world's most important fisheries. In the last 5 years, scientists have observed animal die-offs of unprecedented size, scope, and duration in the waters of Beaufort, Chukchi, and Northern Bering Seas, while recording the displacement and disappearance of entire species of fish and ocean-dwelling invertebrate. The ecosystem is critical for resident seals, walruses, and bears, as well as migratory gray whales, birds, sea lions, and numerous other animals. Historically, long stretches of record-breaking ocean heat and loss of sea ice have fundamentally changed this ecosystem from bottom to top and top to bottom, say researchers who study its inhabitants. Not only are algae and zooplankton affected, but how apex predators such as killer whales are moving into areas once locked away by ice, gaining unfettered access to a spoil of riches. Scientists describe what's going on as less an ecosystem collapse than a brutal regime shift, an event in which many species may disappear, but others will replace them. You can think of it in terms of winners and losers, says Janet Duffy Anderson, a Seattle-based marine scientist who leads annual surveys of the Bering Sea for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Alaska Fishery Science Center. Something is going to emerge and become the more dominant species, and something is going to decline because it can't adapt to that changing food web, she said. A team from the Times traveled to Alaska and spoke with dozens of scientists conducting field research in the Bering Sea and high Arctic to better understand these dramatic changes. Their findings suggest that this vast near-polar ecosystem, stable for thousands of years and resilient to brief but dramatic swings in temperature, is undergoing an irreversible transition. It's like the gates of hell have been opened, says Lorenzo Cianelli, a fisheries oceanographer at Oregon State University, referring to a once ice-covered portion of the Bering Sea that has largely disappeared. Since 2019, federal investigators have declared unexplained mortality events for a variety of animals, including gray whales that migrate past California and several species of Arctic seals. They are also examining large die-offs, or wrecks, as avian biologists call them, in dozens of seabird species, including horned puffins, black-legged kittiwakes, and shearwaters. At the same time, they are documenting the disappearance of the cold pool, a region of the northern Bering Sea that for thousands of years has served as a barrier that protects cold water species, such as Arctic cod and snow crab, from subarctic species such as walleye pollock and Pacific cod. In the last 5 years, many of these Arctic species have almost entirely disappeared from the northern Bering, while populations of warmer-dwelling fish have proliferated. In 2010, a federal survey estimated there were 319,000 metric tons of snow crab in the northern Bering Sea. As of this year, that number had dropped by more than 75%. Meanwhile, a subarctic fish, the Pacific cod, has skyrocketed, going from 29,124 metric tons in 2010 to 227,577 in 2021. Whether the warming has diminished these super cold water species or forced them to migrate elsewhere, farther north or west across the U.S.-Russia border, where American scientists can no longer observe them, remains unclear. But scientists say animals seem to be suffering in these more distant polar regions, too, according to sporadic reports from the area. Which gets to the basic challenge of studying this ecosystem. For so long, its remoteness, freezing temperatures, and lack of winter sunlight have made the region largely inaccessible. Unlike in temperate and tropical climates, where scientists can obtain reasonably accurate population counts of many species, the Arctic doesn't yield its secrets easily. That makes it hard to establish baseline data for scores of species, especially those with little commercial value. That part is really frustrating, said Peter Boving, who studies Arctic seals for NOAA's Alaska Fishery Science Center. He said he and his colleagues wonder if the information they are now gathering is truly baseline data or has already been shifted by years of warming. Only recently have he and other scientists had the technology to conduct these kinds of counts using cameras instead of observers in airplanes, for instance, or installing sound buoys across the ice and sea to capture the movement of whales, seals, and bears. We're only just beginning to understand what is happening up there, said Deborah Giles, a killer whale researcher at the University of Washington Center for Conservation Biology. We just couldn't be there or see things in the way a drone can. The dramatic shifts that Giles, Boving, and others are observing have ramifications that stretch far beyond the Arctic. The Bering Sea is one of the planet's major fishing grounds. The eastern Bering Sea, for instance, supplies more than 40% of the annual U.S. catch of fish and shellfish and is a crucial food source for thousands of Russians and indigenous Alaskans who rely on fish, birds' eggs, walrus, and seal for protein. Globally, cold water ecosystems support the world's fisheries. Halibut, all of the cod, and all of the doethnic crabs and lobsters. This is the majority of the food source for the world, said NOAA's Duffy Anderson. The potential ripple effect could shut down fisheries and leave migrating animals starving for food. These include gray whales and short-tailed shearwaters, a bird that travels more than 9,000 miles every year from Australia and New Zealand to feed in the Arctic smorgasbord before flying home. Alaska is a bellwether for what other systems can expect, she added. It's really just a beginning. Flying along the southeastern coastline of Alaska's Kodiak Island, Matthew Vandela, wearing a safety harness tethered to the inside, a U.S. Coast Guard MH-60T Jayhawk, leaned out the helicopter door, scanning the beaches far below for dead whales and seals. The clouds hung low, so the copter hung close to the sandstone cliffs that rise from this green island, which gets about 80 inches of rain and 60 inches of snowfall every year. Although few dead animals were spotted on this September 2021 afternoon, plenty of furry brown Kodiak bears could be seen bounding across open fields and along the beaches, trying to escape the ruckus of the approaching chopper. "There's one," yelled Vandela, Natural Resources Director for the Sunak, speaking through the intercom system to the chopper's pilots as he pointed to a rotting whale carcass on the beach. The pilots circled and deftly landed on a little strip of land, careful to keep the rotor blades from hitting the eroding wall of rock on the beach's sand. Joe Sekarek, a NOAA enforcement officer, jumped out after Vandela, holding a rifle should hungry Kodiak bears arrive to challenge the small team in its attempt to examine the whale carcass. According to Vandela, the whale had been dead several weeks. Her body was in poor shape with little fat. Since 2019, hundreds of gray whales have died along North America's Pacific coastline, many appearing skinny and underfed. Although researchers have not determined the cause of the die-off, there are ominous signs something is amiss in their Arctic or high Arctic feeding grounds. "We're used to change around here," says Alexis Kachka, a commercial fisherman who has navigated Alaskan waters for more than 30 years. He noted, "Some years are cold, some are warm. Sometimes all of the fish seem to be in one area for a few years, then resettle elsewhere." This fall has been extremely cold in Alaska. The town of Kotzebue in the northwest hit minus 31 degrees on November 28th, the record low for that date. This follows several years of record-setting warmth in the region. What is new, says Kotzka, is the persistence of this change. It's not like it gets super warm for 1 or 2 years and then goes back to normal, he said. Now the changes last, and he said he's encountering things he's never seen before, such as gray whales feeding along the beaches of Kodiak or swimming in packs. Usually there are whales just scattered around the island, he said, but I've seen them kind of bunched up and potted up, and I'm seeing them in places where I don't ordinarily see them. In September, an emaciated young male gray whale was seen off a beach near Kodiak, behaving as though it were trying to feed, scooping material from the shallow shore bottom and filtering it through his baleen, a system many leviathans use to separate food from sand and water. 3 weeks later, that same young male washed ashore dead, not far from where he had been spotted previously. Dozens of scientists validated Kotzka's observations, describing these periods of intense ocean heat and cooling as stanzas, which are growing more extreme and lasting longer than those of the past. That's a problem, said Duffy Anderson, because the longer you stress a system, the deeper and broader the impacts, and therefore the harder for it to bounce back. While it's always possible the current stanza is temporary and the ecosystem could reset itself, that is unlikely, said Rick Toman, Alaska climate specialist at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Due to atmospheric warming, the world's oceans hold so much excess heat that it's improbable the Chukchi Sea will ever be covered again with thick multi-year ice, he said. Nor will we see many more years where the spring ice extends across the Bering, he said. Even though Nome saw one of its coldest winters, or coldest Novembers, I should say, in 100 years of record-keeping, in King Salmon, a town of roughly 300 near Katmai National Preserve, Park and Preserve, recorded its all-time lowest November temperatures, the escalator of warming is going up, Toman said. He conjured up an image of a 5-year-old running up and down an ascending escalator. Somebody standing off the escalator might say, oh, it looks like the kid is going down, but as we know, the escalator is continuing to go up. What we've seen in the Bering Sea in recent years, he's added, is unprecedented. Lee Cooper and Jackie Grebmeier, researchers at the University of Maryland Center for Environmental Science, have visited these waters every year since the 1980s, when they were graduate students at the University of Alaska. Their initial proposal centered on one basic question. What makes these Arctic-like waters of the northern Bering Sea so productive? It was tough work. So much of the ocean was frozen and, therefore, inaccessible. Other researchers faced the same challenge. When we started out, we couldn't get north into the Bering Strait area because of ice and until mid-June, said Kathy Kulitz, a bird biologist with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service who has been researching the northern Bering Sea and high Arctic since 2006 and studying Alaskan birds since 1978. Even then, it wasn't until late June that you could get into the Chukchi. And that's certainly not been the issue since, let's say, 2015 or so. Researchers are focused on ice or the lack of it because the frozen ocean is the foundation of the region's rich ecosystems. It not only keeps the waters beneath it cool, but a layer of algae grows on the underside of these ice sheets, the key to the entire food web. For eons, as the sun moved south in autumn and temperatures dropped in the high latitudes, Arctic ice thickened near the North Pole. At its edges, it reached its frosty fingers into the inlets of the Chukchi and Beaufort Seas, winding its way south through the Bering Strait into the northern Bering Sea. By March, the northern Bering Sea was typically a vast field of white ice, its edges marked by broken sheets that had been pushed into a vertical position by whipping winds and churning currents below. But for the last 50 years, as the region's warm stanzas have increased in duration and intensity, that seasonal ice has dwindled. A 2020 study published in the journal Science documented a reduction in ice extent unlike any other in the last 5,500 years. Its extent in 2018 and 2019 was 60% to 70% lower than the historical average. In an Arctic report card released just this week, federal scientists called the region's changes alarming and undeniable. Long before the sea was named for the 18th century Danish cartographer and Russian naval explorer Vitus Johansen Bering, the icy water bottle consisted of two distinct ecosystems, one subarctic, the other resembling the high Arctic. Fish in the subarctic zone, such as Pacific cod, were deterred by the frigid temperatures of the cold pool, which hover just below 32 degrees. But other fish, such as Arctic cod, capelin, and flatfish, evolved to thrive in this environment, with the cold pool serving as protective barrier. Now that thermal force field has all but vanished. Lyle Britt, director of the Resource Assessment and Conservation Engineering Division of the Alaska Fisheries Science Center, leads annual trawl surveys in the Bering Sea, part of a U.S. effort to systematically monitor commercial fish populations and their ecosystems. The federal government has conducted a survey of the eastern Bering Sea every year since 1982, with the exception of 2020, when COVID grounded the personnel and boats. Federal surveying of the northern Bering Sea began in 2010 amid concerns about the loss of seasonal sea ice. The government has surveyed it a total of 5 times. With each survey, Britt and his mariner colleagues navigate the sea as if tracing over the same piece of graph paper year after year, with 520 evenly dispersed stations at 20-mile intervals. At each one, 376 in the eastern Bering Sea and 144 in the northern Bering Sea, they stop to collect environmental data, such as bottom and surface water temperatures, as well as sampling of fish and invertebrae, which they count and weigh. Data from a Bering Sea mooring shows the average temperature throughout the water column has risen markedly in the last several years. In 2018, water temperatures were 9 degrees above the historical average. Not only have the scientists noticed, so too have the fish. Consider the plight of the walleye pollock, also known as Alaska pollock, one of the region's most important fisheries. While adult walleye pollock are averse to super cold water, juveniles are known to gravitate to the interior of the cold pool. In this protective, chilly dome, the young fish are not only walled off from cold-hating predators, but as their metabolism slow in the frigid temperatures, they can gorge on and grow from the Arctic ecosystem's fatty, rich food sources. With the cold pool gone, there's no refuge for small fish seeking to grow big, said Duffy Anderson. Instead, the adult fish can now move into those spaces. So what has happened to the Arctic fish? Have they just moved north following the cold water? It's not that simple, said Britt. The northern Bering Sea is very shallow. When ice is not there to cover it, it warms up quickly and can exceed temperature detected in the subarctic southern Bering Sea. So we don't fully understand all the implications of why the fish are moving in the directions and patterns that they are. But in some places, he said, particularly those places that once harbored cold-loving fish, such as Arctic cod and capelin, they are just gone. In a healthy Arctic system, thousands of bottom-dwelling species, bottom fish, clams, crabs, and shrimp-like critters, feast on lipid-rich algae that falls from the ice to the bottom of the sea. But in a warm water system, the algae gets taken up in the water column, said Duffy Anderson. The healthy system is highly energy efficient, with sediment-dwelling invertebrae and bottom fish feeding on a range of algae, then birds and large-bodied mammals such as walrus and whales scooping them up. One of the things I'm really concerned about is that the whole food web dynamic kind of comes apart, she said, as warmer waters and animals infiltrate the system. You just put more links in the food chain, and less of that energy is transferred efficiently, and that is what we're beginning to see. Ice is also a essential habitat for some Arctic mammals, as with gray whales, several types of ice seals, which include ringed, spotted, and bearded seals, started showing up skinny or dead around the Chukchi and Bering Seas in 2018, spurring a federal investigation. These Arctic-dwelling species rely on sea ice to pup, nurse, and molt. Without it, they spend more time in the cold water, where they expend too much energy. Young seals are particularly vulnerable. Their chances for survival plummet without the ice, said Alaska Fisheries Science Center's Bovink. There are also reports of killer whales, also known as orcas, showing up in areas they haven't been spotted before, feeding on beluga whales, bowheads, narwhals, said Giles, the University of Washington orca researcher. They are finding channels and openings through the ice, and in some cases preying on animals that have never seen killer whales before, she said. Climate scientists worldwide have long warned that as the planet warms, humans and wildlife will become more vulnerable to infectious diseases previously confined to certain locations and environments. That dynamic could be a factor in the massive die-off of birds in the Bering Sea. Experts estimate at least tens of thousands of birds have died there since 2013. The culprit was avian cholera, a disease not previously detected in these high altitudes, and one that elsewhere rarely fell seabirds such as thick-billed murres, auklets, common eiders, and northern fulmars and gulls. Toxic algae associated with warmer waters has also been detected in a few dead birds and some healthy birds in the Bering Sea, said Rob Kaler, a wildlife biologist with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and may have been responsible for the death of a person living on St. Lawrence Island. Kulitz, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife biologist who has been observing birds in Alaska since the late 1970s, said he's never before seen the large-scale changes of recent years. In 2013, the dead birds did not show signs of being emaciated, but in 2017, hundreds to thousands more began to wash up dead on beaches with clear signs of starvation, she said. There have always been little peaks of die-offs that would last a year or so, but then things would go back to normal, she said. These animals are resilient. They can forgo breeding if they aren't getting enough nutrition. Not all bird species are suffering. Albatross, which are surface feeders, are booming, underscoring for Kulitz the idea that there could be winners and losers in the changing region. Albatross do not nest in Alaska. They only come in the summer to feed and are therefore not tied to eggs or nest while looking for food. Yet for some scientists, it isn't easy to reconcile how a system in balance could so quickly go off the rails, even if some species adapt and thrive as others struggle. For me, it's actually very emotional, said Thoman, the University of Alaska climate specialist, recalling his elementary school days when he read Jack London's To Build a Fire and other stories from the Arctic. The environment that he described, the environment that I saw going through the National Geographic in the 1970s, that environment, he says, doesn't exist anymore. Well, writing for the Washington Post, reporters Matthew Cappucci and Emily Schwing recently found Alaska tops record highs when it comes to temperature. Now, their story appeared in the online extra edition of the December 29, 2021 issue of the News and Observer. Imagine running a 5K and winning the race by 10 minutes. That's analogous to what is transpiring in Alaska at the moment. Exceptional slew of records has tumbled in the wake of extreme warmth, with highs up to 45 degrees above average. The anomalous warmth has also brought record moisture with top-tier rainfall totals thanks to the air's capacity to transport more humidity. The ongoing spate of warmth is tied to a sprawling dome of stagnant high pressure banked southeast of the Aleutians in the northeastern Pacific. Reinforced by unusually warm ocean waters north of Hawaii, that high-pressure heat dome is inducing sinking air. That brings about additional warming. This latest bout of record-shattering warmth caps off a year that has brought a number of high-end climate extremes to North America, including a withering late-June heat wave that heated Seattle up to 108 degrees. Record warmth. On Sunday, the Kodiak Tide Gauge station hit 67 degrees at 2:17 p.m. That would be December 26th. In addition to being a local record, it set a monthly record for the entire state for December. Nearby Kodiak Airport recorded 65 degrees and beat its previously daily record by 20 degrees, surpassing the 45-degree record reading last set on December 26, 1984, by leaps and bounds. Even more remarkable is that the same 65-degree reading would have set a record for November, January, February, and March, too. Those months haven't seen readings above 59, 54, 56, and 57 degrees, respectively. The previous December record was 56 degrees, set on December 22, 1984. Sunday also brought records in Cold Bay, Alaska, where the community hit a high of 62 degrees. The previous record, set in 1990, was 44. St. Paul tied its record at 42 degrees. Unalaska, Alaska, spiked to 57.3 degrees by noon Monday, December 27th, after bottoming out at 50 degrees overnight. According to Rick Thoman, an Alaska-based climatologist, that morning low was warmer than the average low at any point in the year, even the heart of summer. Record rain. For every degree the air warms, it can hold about 4% more water. That is also lending to high-end rainfall extremes. In Fairbanks, north of the heat dome, but still affected by moisture slung north along its periphery, Sunday delivered 1.93 inches of liquid equivalent precipitation. That was the city's wettest December day ever observed, and it marked the third wettest day on record year-round. Records in Fairbanks date to 1929. Fairbanks saw its wettest December on record, too. The city, which has been a substantial uptick in development and boom population recently, has experienced about 9 degrees of warming during December since record-keeping began. Winter rain in the interior region of Alaska is becoming increasingly commonplace, but that doesn't mean it's welcome. The unusually warm temperatures and rainfall wrought havoc on roadways in Alaska. The mild weather melted snow and ice, which then quickly refroze upon roads thanks to surface temperatures well below freezing. The Alaska Department of Transportation described the ice as cement atop pavement. "I'd rather have coal," Brew Miller wrote on social media a day after Christmas. He'd spent the morning scraping at least an inch of ice from his deck in Fairbanks. Miller, 54, was born and raised in Fairbanks. He said by Monday the local cross-country ski trails had been crusted over with ice. Photos posted online show the trails at the popular Birch Hill ski area looking less like snow and more like a thick layer of hardened meringue. Some 95 miles southeast of Fairbanks, the community of Delta Junction has found itself in dire straits. The only local grocery store there is closed indefinitely after a partial collapse of the building's roof from the weight of snow and ice. Hours later, one of the town's two gas stations also saw its roof collapse under the weight of snow and ice. While gas pumps remain open, the convenience store is closed. The largest electric utility in the interior region, Golden Valley Electric Association, reported widespread outages affecting more than 13,000 homes in the Fairbanks area by Sunday, December 26th. By Tuesday, roughly 2,000 customers were still without power. With temperatures forecast to dip to 30 degrees below zero by the end of the week, the race is on for the utility to restore power so that residents can reheat their homes and keep their pipes from freezing. All this, remember, just before New Year's. Nome on the Seward Peninsula picked up 0.43 inches of rain on Sunday, which also was a daily record. In Nome, where people aren't shy about winter storms that include blowing snow, fierce winds, and whiteout conditions, residents woke up to photos over the weekend of a police vehicle in a ditch. It had apparently slid off an icy road in the coastal community at the edge of the Bering Sea. "That was weird," said Christine McRae. She said things have been strange all month. "We've been having this freezing rain off and on for a couple of weeks, and then we get these blizzards back-to-back, followed by more freezing rain." McRae, who owns Bering Tea and Coffee in Nome, said she closed her coffee shop early Tuesday because of the weather. She had to chip ice from her car doors to get to work Tuesday morning. She also had to heave on the doors to get her house to get out. They had frozen shut due to the freezing rain and strong winds. The winter rain comes a month after portions of the state also experienced extreme doses of rainfall. A prodigious rainstorm dumped nearly 30 inches of rain on the Portage Glacier in late October and early November. The historic storm yielded one of the heaviest four-day rainfall totals observed in the state. Wow. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of Armchair Traveler, folks. Hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be joining us next time. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and I remind you the content of the program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Comments and questions may be directed to 919-832-5138. The number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.